Hello, hello, this is Brooke Devard, and you're listening to the Naked Beauty Podcast. You all are in for such a treat because today on the show, I have Cyndia Harvey. Cyndia Harvey has been on my radar for a while because she has simply been creating some of the most interesting hair that you'll see in editorial campaigns on the runway. She works with Mugler, she works with Loewe, she works with Miu Miu, and she is always creating incredible looks. Her work has been featured on the runways of Louis Vuitton, Simone Rocha, Jacquemus, and her clients include Naomi Campbell, Frank Ocean, Kendrick Lamar. She also won the British Fashion Council's Changemaker Prize back in 2021, and she just does incredible things with hair. And it's so interesting when you admire someone from afar and then you get to really meet them and understand their personality and what drives them. It's so fulfilling when they match or surpass, in this case, surpass the vision that I had of Cyndia in my head. She is truly such an inspiration. And we talk so much about Nepo babies, right? People that have these connections through their family that are able to break into these industries that are almost impossible to penetrate. Whatever the opposite of a Nepo baby is, Cyndia is. She is the opposite of a Nepo baby. Because when you look at where she is in her career, that is completely done. She has propelled herself into this position through hard work, through resilience, by betting on herself, by trusting her intuition time and time again, which we speak about on this podcast. But I have so much admiration for people who navigate these really difficult careers essentially alone, without a blueprint, without a roadmap, just by relying on themselves and their creativity and their passion for what they do. We get into her incredible hair care line called This Hair of Mine, which is a scalp-forward textured hair care company that aims to elevate the status of Black hair care. And she is just, again, such a visionary. I was so happy to be able to talk with Cyndia. I think you guys are going to love this conversation. Let's get into it. You'll know real when you get it. It will say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like a gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh, every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue check mark that says authenticity guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Yeah. Hi.
How are you?
Truthfully, this is kind of like the first time I've resurfaced from my maternity leave.
I saw, first of all, how old is baby?
He's coming up to 4 months old.
Is your camera roll just pictures of your son? Like,
honestly, I'm like, but you know what I've noticed is that, yes, there's loads of kind of like selfie angles of me and my son, but there's no like objective pictures of me and my son.
That's your partner's job to get those pictures. And you have to basically ask for them because they like never happen.
Well, I'm actually a single mother.
Hey, well, that's when your friends have to step in.
That's my mate. Yeah.
I want to talk later about the experience of being a single mom, because I think that's a very unique experience that we don't hear about a lot, kind of long-term conversations. But I also saw your Mugler campaign that you posted.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. And I know how these campaigns work. When did you do that?
May, actually. Coming up a year ago. But I mean, it did come out a couple of months ago, I think. But I've literally just been off Instagram basically since I've been pregnant. So there's just a whole stream of work that's just floating out there that I haven't posted.
All of your incredible work. Well, you know what? The Mugler campaign is actually a great place to start on your creative process, because it's like, it's a Nokia eye. incredibly gorgeous. And it's like this close up of her eyes, and she's got these kind of purple contacts. And then you see the hair, and then like this kind of purple tinted with purple, like you did this incredible hair look. Do you get to see the video treatment beforehand if you're doing a fragrance campaign? Do you get to see what the model is wearing and then you build the hair off of that?
Exactly that. I think hair and makeup kind of gets brought in. Okay. As the final step, because it's kind of, you know, the bridge that brings everything together. So the director will be off working on a treatment for the video, you know, of course, like bringing Case's vision to life. And then hair and makeup gets brought in and you'll have a brief, and then you build upon that brief with the team. So knowing the, you know, what the set's going to be, knowing the storyline of the video, of the film, the moving image. And yeah, then you build the hair look up. You build the hair, and also the model as well, super important to take that into consideration for first and foremost. And then, yeah, you kind of just build from there.
So interesting, because in my personal life, I feel like I get ready. Like if I have a big event, I think about what my hair is going to be like before anything else. I'm like hair first, like what's the hair look and hair concept and my beauty look based off of that.
And you know what, Brooke? I noticed that about you. I've noticed that about you. I'm like, you honestly do some of my favorite looks. Oh, I think you can tell that you're so passionate about hair as well as beauty, because, you know, it's so considered. I mean, I was loving the layered braid, long braids. Also, you just have the patience to be pulling out all these looks, because
I'm willing to sit for a great style.
Yeah, always so beautiful, and you really consider it, and it's always so editorial. I love it. I love it.
That is a huge compliment coming from you. So I want to hear about your early relationship to beauty growing up, and just understanding, did you feel beautiful growing up? I know you moved from Jamaica to the UK like around 11 years old, and I'm wondering how that also impacted your beauty journey.
Yes, that's a really great question, because it 100% did. So I grew up in Jamaica. I grew up in my mother's hair salon. She was also a hair stylist. She is no longer. So I've always been around hair. My mum was also a part of like the dancehall scene in Jamaica. Yeah. And so, her and her friends.
Where in Jamaica were you?
We moved around quite a bit, but predominantly in Manchester.
Okay. So I spent time in Port Antonio.
Port Antonio. Yeah. I spent a lot of time in Port Antonio as well. Whenever I go back, that's kind of my base, because I just absolutely love it there.
Okay. And do you know the movie Dancehall Queen? It's like from the late
90s.
An iconic film, but I feel like it so beautifully captures like dancehall culture of Jamaica.
Yeah.
And there's like a very cool, like DIY, like almost like punk rock sensibility to the way you create your look to go to the dance hall.
Yeah, no, 100%. It's all very punk. It's all very DIY. And, you know, it's all kind of like you spend the whole week, building your outfit and you know, thinking about what hairstyle you're going to get. And you know what I mean? And it's like the night of the dance, that whole day is dedicated to getting ready for the dance. And it's all about the looks. I think it's kind of similar to the Vogan scene, you know what I mean? So in like culturally and community wise. But yeah, to get back to your question in terms of how that influenced, how growing up in Jamaica influenced how I look at beauty, I think it definitely made me more, at 11 years old, it made me more aware, like moving from Jamaica. I think, you know, in Jamaica, I went to school and, you know, there's kind of like an acceptance. Doesn't matter what you look like. And also I'm in a country that, you know, I'm seeing myself reflected every single day in the people that I'm around. So, you know, that builds a sense of confidence. You don't question yourself. You don't, you know, of course, on the other spectrum, the other side of things, there's like colorism is kind of like the thing that you face in Jamaica. But I would say, yeah, when I moved, you know, there's loads of things I wasn't aware that was necessarily wrong. Because in Jamaica, most things are quite accepted or celebrated. It doesn't matter what scale your body size falls on, you know, there's a place for you, so you don't feel isolated or ostracized because you look a certain way. There's always a place for someone. And so I have this memory that I didn't realize that I had hairy legs until I started going to secondary school. because in Jamaica, I had my hairy legs and no one has ever mentioned it to me. Right. It was just hairy. You've got hair in your legs and it's totally okay. And I became very aware and very conscious of the fact that I had hairy legs when I started secondary school. So in England. So yeah, it's stuff like that.
And when you went to England, were you in a predominantly white environment or was it quite like diverse when you went
to school? It was very diverse. It was very diverse. I went to a really diverse school. And yes, I was around, you know, black and white kids or multicultural kids, in fact.
Did you feel beautiful?
Did I feel beautiful? I guess at that age, I wasn't, my concern wasn't beauty. If I felt beautiful or not. Those thoughts weren't coming into my head at that age. I think I definitely felt a little bit out of place because I was Jamaican. I then was suddenly aware of, like, you know, my hairy legs. Then I had this thick Jamaican accent. But I don't think that made me feel less beautiful than the other kids. I did, however, quickly catch on to, you know, what was accepted by my peers. And then I kind of like morphed myself into a version of that. And so then I actually became one of, like, quote unquote, the popular girls in school. You know, okay. So I was the first person to like have my ears pierced in the cartilage and stuff like that. So yeah, I think I adapted really quickly to the cultural differences.
Now, how big of an influence were the Spice Girls when you were in school? Because for me, they were everything.
The Spice Girls were huge. I mean, also, I think 97 was when I moved to England. Was that the year the Spice Girls came out?
They came out earlier than that, but they were like 97 was like their height. Right.
I think I was more into like American music. I was like obsessed with Aaliyah, for instance.
Talk
so
about
I think
hair
that
up.
Kind of like had more of an impact on me than the Spice Girls, but I absolutely love the Spice Girls.
Now, I assume because you grew up in a hair salon, you always knew how to do your hair. A lot of us, like middle school, high school, that's when you have like really tragic hair moments. You have like the relaxers that are bad. You're breaking off your hair. Like you don't know what you're doing. Did you have those periods of awkwardness and struggle? Or because you grew up in a hair salon, you kind of always knew what you were doing with your hair?
No, I mean, I definitely had a certain level of skill, but it did not shield me from like the disaster hairstyles. You know what I mean? Also, when I was around 6 years old or something like that, I got a really bad fungal infection on my scalp and almost lost all my hair. So I went through that as a child. And I guess in my teenage years, I did experiment a lot. And, you know, gel was my best friend. The 99p gel from the drugstore was my best friend. You know, I've relaxed my hair. I've shaved my head. I've relaxed and color in the same week. All my hair fell out again. I mean, I've had a lot of... And this was at an age where I should have known better, but was still taking the risk.
Sometimes you need that firsthand data to like know, like, you know what, 100. Maybe I'm gonna try to color my hair and relax it at the same time. Maybe I'll be the exception. When did you know you wanted this to be your career? When did you know, like, I can do hair full time? This is like my calling. This is what I can do in a way that no one else can.
So I remember I was 16 years old. And I was estranged from my family. So I'd left home at 16 or had to leave the home at 16.
Do you mind if I ask why?
I grew up in a very domestically violent household. And it was just, you know, I knew that I had to get out. And so at 16, I was determined. That's the age when you can kind of like, you know, in the UK, leave home. And so I was like, totally determined. I was like, I'm getting myself out of this situation. And I did.
And India, how old are you now?
I'm 37.
Okay. So like now being an adult, 16 is like a baby. Right?
You know,
like,
you're absolutely right, Brooke. It's only now that I'm this age I interact with 16-year-olds now, especially like at work or just like any 16-year-old kid. And I'm like, wow, you're such a baby. But at the time, I didn't have the opportunity to be that child. Do you know what I mean? I've never had that opportunity. And so actually hair was something so like it was such a an life-saving kind of like antidote to this awful situation that I'd found myself in and was trying to escape. I needed to feel good and I needed to feel, you know, like I was capable. And hair was something that I've always used as like an escapism route and also something I was always confident in, you know, like I was very naturally skilled in it. And so at the time I was going through that at 16 and, you know, having no guidance or not even having no guidance, but no adult influence to, you know, nurture you and guide you in the right way. It's like, you know what? That makes me feel good. I'm going to go and do that. And, you know, I did my hair course and I breezed through it. And yeah, it definitely did everything that I imagined. You know what I mean? It made me escape from, you know, the stress that I was under at the time, which I didn't even know. I was just living life as though nothing was happening. But I was under a tremendous amount of stress. But, you know, 16-year-old you... I think 16-year-old anyone is quite, you're at your most resilient, I think, when you're resilient. When you're young.
Yeah. Wow. And it's, yeah, it's something that you could do and you knew you could make money doing. Now, I'm curious if you have, you know, entered therapy or done anything to kind of heal what you were going through in your teens as an adult. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a really good question as well. I think, you know, throughout my adult life, I, you know, mostly have been in fight mode. My nervous system was like just set on in that mode for a really long time. And then, yes, I have done therapy. I think when I'm in my low points in my life, I think instinctively I know exactly what to do. It's almost like I do them without even really thinking about it. You know what I mean? So whether it's, you know, going on a silent retreat and spending 2 weeks at a monastery or, you know.
Have you done that? I'm like,
yeah, so... I have done that.
Wow. Okay. Cause you seem, I will say, very calm and centered and grounded and present. Now I am one of these people that is just convinced I could never do a silent retreat. Like I just can't be alone with my thoughts for two weeks, no phone. Like I just can't do it. Like, what was that like?
It was amazing. It was incredible. And it was just something that I was just drawn to and it was just calling me. And so I did it. I tend to not question things too much. I kind of like have this really naive belief in the universe's unfolding of my life. And so I just always take the steps that's in front of me. And yeah. Even if it's like leads me down a difficult path, I just trust, I trust my process, you know? And so I always try to lean into those things. And so, yeah, the silent retreat was, it was what I needed at the time. So I really embraced it and I really threw myself into it. And, you know, you say that you can't be alone with your thoughts, but until you do it, you just never, you realize actually that you can, because what are your thoughts really, isn't it? I just threw myself in it and you're breaking down like the layers of your mind. And then, you know, it's almost kind of like, then your mind becomes compartmentalizing you. I don't want to go into that because it's going to sound like I'm mental.
No, I mean, I can imagine that.
It's kind of like, you then understand when people, you then understand like the ego. And of course, I'm only scratching the surface of that, you know, that kind of like whole conversation and exploration. But yeah, it gave you, it gave me a taste of it. And I think people think of meditation as, oh, you know, when you meditate to be good at it, it's when you know how to turn your thoughts off. But that's not what meditation is. Like your thoughts are there, is knowing your thoughts are there and knowing not to run off with them.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So it's the discipline to not run off with them. Yes. That's what meditation is.
Yes. Okay. You're inspiring me to think about maybe starting to bring that into my practice.
Yeah.
Now, you're 16. You've put yourself through beauty school. So like, I'm going to fast forward to today. You're working with Loewe. You're working with Jacquemus. You're working with literally the top designers and fashion houses in the world. Fashion specifically is one of these industries that you always hear, like, you have to be connected, you've got to have an in, your parents have to know someone that knows someone at LVMH to like even get you in the door. So what is that jump between you putting yourself through school and now working with the top designers in the world, top photographers, top creative directors in the world?
First of all, at 16, I didn't have this vision for myself. You know, like I didn't think, oh, I'm going to, this is where I want to eventually get to in my career. I've never been able to think too much in the future. You know, people have 5-year plans or whatever. I've just never been able to like work that way. And so I've always just been like, okay, I've done that. What's next? That's not challenging anymore. I'm going to move on to the next thing, move on to the next thing. It's not to say that I'm not ambitious. Mm. It's just my path to that is like very different. And so, you know, I did put myself through school. I worked in a salon for 5 years, like one of the busiest black hair salons in London. It was called Hype Couture, and it was like the salon of all salons. Yeah. And I was winning awards, and, you know, I did really well. I worked myself up from literally cleaning hair in a brush to being like a senior stylist on the shop floor. After 5 years, it didn't feel challenging to me anymore. So I was like, what is the next thing? And first of all, I didn't even know that this side of the industry existed because of what you've just said. I don't have any connection. I don't have family, you know, who knows someone to be exposed to these things. So I wasn't exposed to it. But then there was a girl in the salon who used to kind of like do some musicians. And so I knew something of the sort existed. And then I was in the salon one day, and it was like this real serendipitous moment. I was just in the salon reading one of the hair magazines, and there was this hairstyle, an interview from a hairstylist, and maybe you know him or you don't. His name is James Brown, and he was, you know, a 90s icon. He's basically came up with Kate Moss, and, you know, he did all those early Kate Moss campaigns. And so there's an interview with him, and they're like, what advice would you give young people looking to get into the industry? And he said, contact some agencies, work under someone already established. Here are some agencies, go. Oh,
listen, he wasn't gatekeeping.
He was not gatekeeping. And I did exactly that, Brooke. And, you know, it took a while. It wasn't like overnight. Lots of agencies just ignored me. They were just like, who is this kid, you know, emailing me every week. But I was just super persistent with emailing the agencies. And finally, an agency contacted me, and I went in to see them. And then that's how I started to work for Sam McKnight, because that was his agency. Yeah.
And Sam McKnight is like, I mean, you should put it in perspective for the listeners, one of the most famous hairstylists in the country.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in the industry.
In the industry. So, you know, I have to ask you this, because you got this like great straightforward advice from this magazine that you read. For people mm-hmm. listening now that would love to have a career like yours, that would love mm-hmm. to break in and have zero connections in this mm-hmm. world, what would you suggest? Would you suggest the same thing of reaching out to agencies, or would you suggest using social media? Like, what's the way to break in now if you don't have any connection?
Yeah, I think it's still really good advice, you know, the one that I followed. And I think, you know, it's always really great to learn from someone who has been doing it for a really long time, who has, you know, because you come from, you know, a salon environment is very different to how the fashion environment works. The fashion environment is very different to how the music environment works. The music environment is very different to how the celebrity environment works. So it depends on which area you want to work in. Go out, seek someone who's already established in that area and ask to assist them. It's the best, absolutely best way to learn and to make connections. Through assisting, I assisted Sam for six wow. years, not all his first assistant. I was his first assistant for 4 years or so. And, you know, that allowed me to be seen by the caliber of people that he was working with, you know? Yeah. So then when I left, all those people were already used to me. They saw me, they know I'm capable. And so they automatically trust me through that co-signed through Sam. Not only that, I was great at what I did, and I'm a really, really dedicated worker. So yeah, you also obviously have to have the discipline, the dedication, and the talent. And then
yes. I interviewed Sir John in December, and he talked about when he was the assistant. He's like, I loved being an assistant, and I was like the best assistant. Like, I went above and yeah. beyond.
Exactly.
You have to really thrive in that role. And Sam McKnight was working with Kate Moss, Lady Gaga, working with Chanel and Fendi and yeah. Burberry. He even do Princess Diana's hair.
He did. Yes. He was her stylist for a really long time up until she passed away.
I mean,
yeah, he's a legend. He's an absolute legend. And so he was the absolute best person to have as a mentor, you know, and he was really open with everything and with, you know, his advice and with his support after I left him as well. So, yeah, I'm like so thankful for Sam. Yeah, because, well, yeah, that definitely changed the trajectory of my career for sure.
And someone who assists for you, you'll change the trajectory of their career, right?
Yeah.
So this is an interesting point about hair. I think it's a little specific to hair in the UK. So you can, of course, do all types of hair. I've seen your work in the Miu Miu campaigns. Like, you can do, pick a hair type. You can do it. You can do a lace front. You can do natural hair. You can do white hair.
Yeah.
And then, as we both know, so many white stylists truly cannot do black hair, like cannot do it. When I lived in London, I went to Errol Douglas Salon.
Oh, yeah.
And I booked a trim and like a, you know, silk press. They didn't call it a silk press, a blowout. And I was, when the person came to get me and it was a white woman, I was truly so confused because in the US, hair salons are like legitimately segregated. I know very, 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 very few black women that have like white people doing their hair. It's very rare in the US. But when I was there at Errol Douglas, they were like, oh no, we're all trained on like all types of hair. Like, we learn how to do all types of hair. And I'm like, oh, that's very different from how it is in New York. Do you feel like, one, in the industry you work in, do you continue to see that sometimes black stylists can do all types of hair and that's not reciprocated in terms of white stylists being able to do all types of hair? And two, do you think there's a difference between how hairstylists are taught in the UK to do different hair textures versus in the US?
My personal experience, like, I worked in a predominantly black hair salon. And I think what Errol Douglas is doing at his salon is obviously very progressive. So, you know, amazing, like, kudos to him. We need more of Errol Douglas. I think maybe there are more white hairstylists in the UK who knows how to do black hair, but there's still not many, you know, so it still is an issue that people, you know, still stylists are on set and they're not competent in doing black hair. And the trend that you see now is that you have the white hairstylist and they get in, you know, the black assistant to come in, like, do the black hair, and the credit is under their name or whatever. It's still a big problem, but there is progress and a lot more. I think all my assistants anyway, they absolutely have to know how to do all hair types. Otherwise, you're just not on the team. Like, you won't even get considered.
It's shocking to me, though, that it's not the standard. Like, I hate when I see runway shows and the white models will have a whole hair look and then it will go to the black models and they're just like in a slick back bun. And I'm like, just say you didn't have anyone that could do their hair. Like, it's so unfair to the black models. I hate
it's so unfair. I've made it my personal mission is to bring the black models into the fantasy world of fashion. You know what I mean? Like, why I'm not going to water it down or just like give them like, you know, like a moisturized afro. No, I'm going to bring you into the fantasy, like how I will consider the white models. You know what I mean? If I get a brief and it's like, you know, whatever the hair may be, I'm going to do the version of that with black hair as well. I'm not going to do a completely different hairstyle.
Right, well, thank God for you, because it's rare. I'm sure when you see it, does it really bother you?
It frustrates me. You know, and the girls, they want to be involved. Like, they want to be a part of that fantasy and, you know, the otherworldliness and, you know, the world building of the whole thing. And yeah, I think they just get shortchanged into, you know, not being considered.
Well, speaking of fantasy, we had the Naked Beauty team round up some of our favorite looks that you have done, like the Cindy's Greatest Hits. And the first one we have to talk about are these kind of lace, like literal lace fronts that you did. You know what this hairstyle reminds me of? You know when people like rap, like break down rappers' bars, like they'll be like, oh, this Jay-Z lyric, it means this, but it also means this. I feel like using actual lace on the front of a wig, it's like, this is a lace front. Like, you see the double entendre, you see the art in this. Tell me about how this came together. This is like, I've never seen anything like this.
Okay, so it was for Mugler. I can't remember what season show it was. I don't know how, you know, show works. So basically we'll have a test day. So it's a day that you try out looks for the show, like what will work, what won't work. So you're there with the designer and the stylist and a test model and the makeup artist. And we just like try a bunch of things. And for that season, Casey was really into lace. And, you know, there was lacing in like a lot of the garments and, you know, beautiful, intricate lacing, very specific to Mugler, the lace. And so we're doing the hair and makeup test, and I'm thinking, you know, oh, what could he, what he wanted to incorporate it into the hair somehow, like lace. With me, you know, my signature, it's just little accents that make great impact. You know, it's not necessarily like towering hair. It's just really clever things that makes you think and stop. You're like, oh my God, a literal lace front. Yeah, it's so simple, right? But you're like, wow. And so I was thinking, you know, I'm always kind of like searching and like ideating with my team, like, how do we find that moment, you know? And, you know, when we're shopping for wigs, basically on the mannequin, the wig will just be on the mannequin with the lace just like hanging down the face. You know, I don't know if you've seen a wig in a hair shop. And I was like, that's interesting. Let's see how that looks, you know, just as a look. So we tried to play around with the actual lace of the actual wig. That didn't work. And then I was like, okay, oh my God, yeah, let's use the lace and make this lace front and like do these like swirly baby hairs. And so we just like got the lace, we cut out these little baby hairs from the lace.
Baby hairs. Yeah. The way the lace was cut into baby hairs was like the thing that also just had me just gagged. But it's one of those things where you're like, I've never seen this before. And why not? And then it also kind of looked like a headband too, right? Like it also kind of looked like a lace headband, which I was like, this is just so, it's art, you know, it's just so brilliant.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you. We had fun creating it for sure. And then, you know, we had it on Z-Way, who just absolutely killed the look.
Yes, I remember that as well. Well, you said that you kind of specialize in little details, but you've also done some really big, beautiful sculptural hair. Like the hair that you did for Jacquemus that was like, I don't know, it's like literal geometric shapes.
Yeah.
One, I'm curious how that came together, because the hair really was the star of that campaign. Like, I'm like, I don't even know what they were selling for me. They were selling the hair for me. Was it accessories? I don't know. I probably should know. But what was the process of like aligning with the creative team on that vision? And then two, just like, how did you create those hair looks? Like, what was the structure underneath?
Oh my God, Brooke. So, I mean, I think the part of my job that I enjoy them is the bit before, right? So it's the being in the studio, it's the building, it's the engineering, because it's basically what you're doing when you're doing hair and hair at that, on that scale as well. Like, how do I get this hair? It's this big to stand on this,
right,
defy gravity on this model. So it's so much problem solving and engineering, and I just get lost in that because it's like all these little details that you have to like bring together, and you try something and it completely doesn't work and you have to start again. You've spent 3 days on it, but you realize that it doesn't work. You have to start again. But I thrive when I'm doing that. You know what I mean? It's like the big picture for me is, yes, beautiful, but it's like all the build up to it that also that I really, really value. So yeah, we're in conversation for a little while with the team at Jacquemus, and I, first of all, like, you know, they gave me the brief and they're like, you know, we want these, this hair to basically fill the screen. You know, imagine like the square on an iPhone, like we want it to like fill, to fill that square. And then Jacquemus, they have the, you know, circles and square that you can see run through a lot of their collections from the very beginning. So that was a big inspiration for that shoot as well, hence the square. And yeah, we kind of like went back and forth. I sent them a few sketches, then they would sign it off, and then we then tested it in the studio, me and my team of assistant, you know, building it. Okay, so how are we gonna, you know, this, sometimes you also offer things and you're like, oh my God, I don't even know how I'm gonna make that.
But I sketched it, so
yeah, so it has to be done.
Yes, okay.
And we had a few of those, so I was like, oh my God, like, but anyway, and yeah, it was just like a really fun couple of weeks in the studio, just working away, like working out the engineering of these sculptural pieces.
Wow.
And then, you know, everything was basically pre-made. And then on the shoot, you just kind of like put it on the model's head and
do the finessing.
Yeah.
Is there like a structure? Like, is there like styrofoam or something underneath the hair? Like, what is underneath the hair to create this?
I think I'm going to give away my little secret.
Okay. You know what? Let's keep that.
But there is definitely a structure. And then you have to think about, okay, it has to be kind of weightless because the model is going to be in it for at least, you know, however many couple of hours, whatever, you know, you don't want their necks to be, you know what I mean? So there's so many, so we tried a lot of different things, you know, to build the structure underneath. And then, yes, of course, it was a lightweight material.
Yes. I always appreciate, like, you know, we have this joke about like how Black women doing hair is like women in STEM, but like it is engineering. Like math and measurements and weight and gravity, and you create looks for, like, when you're out in the elements, like, you could be shooting a campaign and you've got to think if it's raining or, like, if there's wind, like, all of these things, like, it's literal, like, math and science and art. It is not easy to create.
No, it really isn't. I'm glad you appreciate that.
And your brain has to work in on so many different levels. It's not just like, oh, what's going to look good. It's like, how is the model going to feel in it? Yeah,
exactly.
I appreciate hearing you break it down. Well, we have to talk about motherhood. You became a mom. How has that changed your relationship to yourself and to just like the way you take care of yourself?
Well, I'm in the early months of motherhood and
you look great, by the way. You're like so pulled together. 4 months in, I don't even know. It was a disaster. 4 months in is like your early days.
Yeah. I know. It's fresh. It's like super fresh. And I mean, I guess I'm still kind of like finding my feet, you know. My baby is mate, like, is great. He's sleeping, you know, quite okay. So I get to catch up on some rest and, like, yeah. And I guess I've just been off completely work as well, which has been like really nice. So I haven't, and that's allowed me to the room and the space to kind of like learn this new way of life, as well as like taking care of myself. And yeah, but it's a crazy little dance that you're trying to learn.
Oh yes, and every day is so humbling.
And
isn't
every day
it?
And like, truthfully, Brooke, it's like some days I don't even get to brush my teeth for the day, so I don't know how I'm, you know, the beauty thing, I'm really not like
it's more of a question of like hygiene versus like beauty.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know what, it's like, you strike me as someone who has an incredible work ethic, and it seems like you've been probably working really hard since you've been 16. So to even take off time from work and let your, even though I think raising a child, especially a newborn, is harder than like any job in the world, but to have this time for yourself to not be working must be kind of like a monumental experience for you in itself.
100%. And it's the actual thing that I keep saying to everyone. I was like, I've been working since I was 16 years old. I've not had a break like this. And I honestly, Brooke, I've really like indulged in it. Really enjoyed it. I've really just embraced it. And it's been amazing. And I haven't stressed about it. Or, you know, obviously, you know, it's quite daunting for a woman to take the amount of time that you take off to have a child. You know, you do have these thoughts of like, oh my God, like, you know, am I going to pick back up? Am I going to be able to pick up where I left off? And all of those thoughts you have, that is a real issue. So of course, that's why you have them, but I just try not to focus on that at all. And I'm like, I'm just going to do this. I think the moment when I did get pregnant, I said to myself, okay, my life is going to change now. And I'm at peace with whatever that change is going to be, whether it means taking a step back career-wise or whether it means, you know, even going further. But I was very open and like at peace with whichever direction it went into. And that's allowed me to have a very calm and peaceful maternity leave and not worry about, you know, having my career look exactly how it looked when I left.
Yes, because it's going to change and evolve. And I feel like you're going to see it's going to change for the better in so many ways.
Yeah, that's what every mother says that as well.
You know, another thing, Cynthia, as you've been talking, and this is really our first time talking, I've admired your work for so long, but now it's great getting to know your personality. You strike me as someone who lets their intuition lead them. And it seems like it brings you a tremendous amount of peace. As you talk about your career and the things, you're just like, I knew I had to leave. I knew I had to do this. I knew, even you read that advice in the magazine. Lots of people read that advice in the magazine, but you like knew you had to take it. It seems like your intuition has always guided you.
Yeah, I think 100%. I think also that's as a result of growing up in the environment that I did grow up in. I had nothing but my intuition to guide me. So yeah, I've always had like a real strong affinity to kind of like do the things that my gut is telling me and my whole being is telling me to do.
Yes.
And sometimes that is scary and sometimes that is a disaster as well. But I think because I've been through so much adversity and I've seen how that has shaped me in a positive way, I'm not afraid to take risks.
So you can always come back from anything, really. And I do want to hear about having, you know, a tribe and community around you as a single mother, because it is so important. How have your friends and just your chosen family come to support you in this moment?
I love this question, because actually I think even when I left home at 16, so I have a group of friends, and I have one friend in particular who we've known each other since we were 11 years old. She was one of my first friends from when I came from Jamaica and started school. And she's my friend up to this day. We've evolved together and we've gone in the same direction, luckily, because obviously we could have gone opposite ways. And most of my closest friends I've known as well since I was 16. And they've just been absolutely incredible in my journey as a single mother so far. And actually, two of them were my birth partners. My friend since I was 11 years old and my other friend since I was 16. So they were my birth partners. And they were just incredible, you know, at home. And I ended up in hospital in the end, but we started at home. And then, they were just incredible. And they've been absolutely amazing since. One of them is a mother herself, so she kind of understands. And the other one actually is having a baby in May. So.
Oh my gosh. Beautiful.
Brooke, I actually have so much guilt now for how little I was present for like my friends who previously had kids. I didn't know that you needed me that much.
Right. Just like needed me to like come over and fold laundry, like the smallest thing. Yes.
Literally. Yes. And I was like, I am so sorry that I wasn't there for you, but you just don't know until you take that, you know, until you're walking in those shoes, you just don't know.
Yes.
And that my friends have been really, really amazing. I'm so lucky.
I'm so happy you have that support system.
Yeah.
So tell us about your brand, This Hair of Mine, and why it was important to create kind of scalp first care for Afro textured hair.
Yes. So This Hair of Mine, my little baby, we launched that. It's coming up 2 years now, 2.5 years since we launched the brand. And This Hair of Mine exists to elevate the status of texture-rich hair, right? I think the influence Black hair has on society is profound. You see it everywhere. I mean, even down to, you know, from hairstyles to the language that is used, it's just, you know what I mean? Like wash day is synonymous with Black women, yet, you know, everyone is using wash day in their marketing campaign nowadays. So it's like that influence is so undeniable, yet I find that I just didn't have an elevated hair care brand that I could go to, because I like expensive skincare and hair care. And also, I think as well, the moment that I decided to start the brand was when I would obviously have my kit and I could go to, say, a Liberty's. I don't know if you know Liberty's here in London. Yeah. To get, you know, my hair care for, say, if I'm doing Kate Moss.
Right.
If I'm doing Naomi Campbell and I want something for Afro hair, I have to go to, you know, the equivalent to like your beauty supply store. But we all know how nice they are. Right. So as a professional, as well as a consumer, you know, I just didn't like the experience. And I was like, oh, there's a massive disparity here. And also I didn't feel proud. Like if Naomi Campbell was to ask me, what would you recommend to buy for my hair? I didn't have a go-to brand that I could say, this is the brand for you. You know what I mean? And I was like, okay, I'm going to create that brand.
I will just say, just visually, like the bottle, the fonts that are used, like the vessel, like it's all so beautiful and so elevated. It looks like so gorgeous on your vanity.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. I wanted people to feel proud owning this and like really, and like, you know, want to show it off as you do with Barbara Sturm skincare. You know what I mean? Like you put it on show. You don't put it in a box in your cupboard. And something that I could also, you know, use on set and recommend to my clients as well. We started with a scalp serum because I think it's kind of like an ode to Black women, right? So I think for many Black women, the first memory of getting your hair done is in between your mother's legs, getting your scalp taken care of. And so it's kind of that ritual in a bottle, but made in as a more effective solution, because we know we don't use grease anymore. We don't use Blue Magic. So that is This Hair of Mine. We're elevated care for texture rich hair. And we are reinventing your routine one ritual at a time.
Yes. Do you know what's on the roadmap for new product? I mean, You've got your hands full now, of course. Have you thought about what's next in terms of what products you want to create?
Yeah, so we're going to do an in-shower product, and also we are coming out with some amazing, innovative tools and accessories.
Ooh, okay. I'm very excited about that. I'm launching my heatless hair rollers, oh my gosh, this month, next month.
Amazing. Yes, I've been seeing you teasing that for a long time now.
Absolutely, for the longest time. And like, finally here. Hair tools and accessories is a category that's like also so underserved for Black hair specifically. Okay, I have to get into your favorite products because you have gorgeous skin. I need to know, what are your skincare staples? What is your favorite skincare that you use day in, day out? Like, what are you loving right now?
Yeah, I've established a skincare routine and it's just been the same forever now.
Okay. It works. Don't change it.
Yeah, if it works, just don't change it. And first of all, I would say water is my number one recommendation. And if I'm not intaking enough, like I can see it in my skin immediately. At the moment, I'm using, I think what's been a staple for a really long time in my routine is I use Gentle Matter Cleanser by Clair.
Oh my gosh. I love Clair and I love that cleanser. And so many people actually come on and specifically like shout out that cleanser. It's really good.
It's so good. But I absolutely love all of Leslie's formulas. I think they are so considered and it works and they're so curated and advanced. It's gentle on your skin and it really like works. And I just love the names that she gives to them, like Stellar Restoration. And like, I absolutely love the brand. I'm a massive fan of the brand. So I use that cleanser. And then I use a vitamin C serum. What's it called? The Drunk Elephant Vitamin C Serum. I also use P50.
Okay, Biologique. Okay. Part of the cult. You're part of the Biologique.
I'm part of the cult.
It works.
And my assistant got me onto it, actually. And a moisturizer. I kind of like switch and change moisturizers. I'm not like committed to one. So I actually really love the Human Race moisturizer.
I'm so happy
The humidifying cream. Yeah, I really like it.
I tell people that and they're like, is it really good? I'm like, I'm not just like saying this, like it's just like a really good solid.
It does what it says on the can.
It really does. I love that moisturizer.
Yeah, same. So I use that or I use a Dr. Jart Ceramin. So I think it's Ceramin is called. And then I use your favorite Unseen Sunscreen.
yes, we love the Super Goop Unseen Sunscreen. And you have such an even skin texture. You don't have any hyperpigmentation. Like your skin texture is so even. So I'm not surprised to hear that you use chemical exfoliant like a P50 and that you're diligent about sunscreen. And I just the reason why I love Unseen Sunscreen is you just put it on without even thinking of it. It's not like is it blended? It's just your skin's protected. Go about
exactly. So I actually use that in the summer and then in the winter I use Black Girl Sunscreen.
Which
I love that, like, you know.
Yes, that glow. So good.
And I have to shout out Edam actually.
Oh, Edam. Okay. Sarah.
Their Cloud Cushion, the moisturizer. Yeah.
Okay. I haven't tried the Cloud Cushion, but I hear it's great.
Yeah, it's really good.
And what do you use on your hair besides this hair of mine? I'm so curious if you've tried Sacred yet. Like, I'm curious what other
I have not tried Sacred.
What? I am shocked. Anyone from the Sacred team is listening to this episode, please.
Can you send me some? Can you send me a box, please?
Oh my gosh. I think it's honestly phenomenal.
Is it really good?
I'm a biased source, admittedly. I love Beyonce, but I think it's truly like very good product. But I'm curious, what do you use besides your...
I'm excited to try it then. Yeah. So what do I use on my hair? So I'm very minimal in my skincare, although I gave you so many products. But I'm also like, I'm very minimal in my makeup. I literally just wear Ami Cole. I know you're a massive fan of that as well. The tinted moisturizer. And actually what I used to do before I used to wear that tinted moisturizer is I used to buy the Bobbi Brown foundation stick, which is like hard. And I used to put a tiny bit on the back of my hand and mix it with my moisturizer. And that's what I used to do. And now Ami Cole just made that product to me. So that's what I use makeup wise. And, you know, I just like pencil in my brows a bit. And this is as much makeup as you'll probably see me in.
What What pencil?
Regardless of the occasion. I use the Mac. Yeah, the Mac. I don't know if it has
a little micro brow, like the tiny.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, in color stud. And yeah, maybe like some Weleda skin food just for like a little glow. But what was your question? You asked me.
Oh, what yeah. other hair care?
So it depends. So I sometimes wear my hair out like this, flat twist and out, or I wear braid. So I haven't really, to be honest with you, I haven't really been committed to a certain product because I've tried a lot of things, obviously, because I'm developing products. So I'm like trying like a lot of things. So I'm always like trying something new in my hair. But I will say that I love this British brand and it's called Dizziac, their shampoo and conditioner. That's kind of like my default. Like if, you know, the one that I find that I go back to a lot is deep conditioner and hydration wash. I think they've done a great job with that product.
Spell Dizziac.
Dizziak.
Okay, I'll have to look into that.
Yeah, check it out.
Any fragrances you love? I'm like obsessed with knowing what fragrance people wear now.
Yes, I really love, there's a brand called Orme. You might have seen them. They have like a very unique bottle. So it's like this bottle with these wooden ornamental caps.
Oh, yes. I've seen this. Yes. I've seen the bottles and they're so sculptural and gorgeous.
The bottle is beautiful, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And then I think the scent that I wear in that one,
which is
Marge Page or something.
Yes, yes. And I see it says Oriental and Woody Accords. Okay. This looks very nice. It's very expensive.
It's really expensive.
This is like a $350 perfume. But, you know, when you find the right fragrance, it really can just change your whole mood. It's like you don't even feel dressed without your perfect fragrance.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's very little I spend money on. Underwear is one. Fragrance is one. Food and skincare.
Wait, now and furniture. You just listed 10 things. You're like, I'm very low maintenance. I just need to have really nice furniture, skincare, underwear, clothes.
Not clothes. Clothes I'm not fussed about, actually. Like, okay. Just the undergarments.
Wait, so where are you buying your undergarments? Now I need to know.
So I used to be a massive fan of Stella McCartney underwear.
Wow. Okay.
And I still am, actually. You know, they do really... just really nice cuts. And I am part of the Skims Club.
Skims. Yeah, I know. I always say like, I hate to admit how wonderful Skims truly
is. It's a great product.
Can't argue with that. But you know what? Also, I feel like, again, like coming back to this postpartum discussion, you just need things that make you feel good. Like you need skincare that makes you feel good. You need the like underwear that feels good under what you're wearing. Like you this fragrance that makes you feel alive, the beautiful candle on your nightstand. Like, I feel like you have to have these like little moments for yourself. And I almost feel like after you become a mom, self-care becomes like more important because
you're
taking care of someone else.
Yeah. No, I totally agree.
Well, I'd love to know, my final question for you is, when do you feel most beautiful?
To answer this, I also have to answer what feeling beautiful means to me. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's like a like radical authenticity, right? Like having a radical sense of self. And that changes because it's a state of mind. It ebbs and it flows, you know, depending on like what stage of life you are. At the moment, I'm in my motherhood phase, right? And so I feel the most beautiful when I'm in the most primal place in motherhood. So I'm so in love with like breastfeeding my baby. You know what I mean? Like I feel so whole and content in that moment. Yes. And I think at the moment, that's when I'm feeling the most kind of like myself.
Yes.
Which is when I feel most beautiful.
Oh, that's such a beautiful answer. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing. Again, I've admired your work for so long. It's so great to learn about you and your story. And I hope that when I'm in London next, we can hang out and...
Or vice versa. When I'm in LA. Yeah, for sure.
Yes, that would be amazing. You're in LA. But really, thank you so much for coming on and sharing so much with us.
No, thank you for having me. I've been such a fan of your podcast for a really long time, Brooke, and I think you're doing such a great job, and I'm very happy that you've invited me on to talk.
Thank you so much.
You'll know real when you get it. It will say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like a gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue check mark that says authenticity guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms. That was my conversation with the incredible Cyndia Harvey. I hope you all were as inspired as I was by her story. She's truly someone that I admire, and we should honestly all be paying attention to, because she's going to continue creating incredible looks, creating incredible things in the hair space, and doing it all while being a mom. So excited for everything in Cyndia's future, and I'm so excited that she was able to come on Naked Beauty and share more of her story with us. Thank you all so much for listening, for all of the support. If you love this episode, share it on your Instagram stories, tag me at Naked Beauty Planet. That always helps other people find the show. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts. If you're not subscribed, we have new incredible episodes every single Monday. Subscribe on Spotify if you're not an Apple Podcast user. Take the time to rate and review the show. That helps. All of the incredible products mentioned in today's episode are linked in the show notes. And I will be back next week with a really great episode. Do you guys know what next Monday is? It's the first Monday in May. Yes, it is the Super Bowl of beauty and hair and fashion, the Met Gala. And we are doing an episode taking you behind the scenes of all things Met Gala, talking to the people in the know. So make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss that episode. All right, we'll talk soon. We tell them, get away, do we dig it with the drum? Get away, do we dig it with the drum? Why fight and go along like you now? Want some of my Liverpool tongue, me your medicine. Get away, do we dig it with the drum? Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.